It is time for another episode of East Coast Bias on missioncanny.blogspot.com with your hosts, Brennan Canny and Jason Mish. Now recording live simultaneously from Philadelphia and Daytona Beach, it's East Coast Bias.
Hello and welcome to another episode of East Coast Bias. We are going to pretend that it's Tuesday since we missed our Monday podcast. Shocking, I know. We are the epitome of, you know, schedules.
Procrastination.
And, right, exactly. That too. But on the menu for today, we have a new segment we're going to debut, which Jason will be leading into right after this, called Live Wire, where we take some brief news, the most important stuff that we can find. We will then go into the NFL rundown, followed by the college football rundown. And lastly, we will do the weekly fill, in which we will talk about the Philadelphia Eagles, who just came off a win, big win, their first NFC East Division win against the now 5-4 Washington Redskins. But before we get into that, we want to get into the Live Wire. Jason, what do you have for us?
Like you said, we are debuting this, and basically we'll just be giving you some news and notes of the weekend that we perhaps could not fit into some of our segments today. So we will begin with, over the weekend, Ryan Braun, by 2 points over Troy Tulowitzki, won the NL Rookie of the Year. Dustin Pedroia won in a landslide in the AL. And today at 2 o'clock, the AL Cy Young winner was announced, and it was CC Sabathia. A lot of people probably would have liked Beckett in that, especially the postseason performance Beckett put together, but of course, postseason does not count for the AL Cy Young.
It should, though. It should.
It should. Jorge Posada agreed to a 4-year deal, re-upping with the Yankees. He will remain a New York pinstriper. And the Yankees have also proposed a deal to their closer, Mariano Rivera, for $44 million over 3 years. Be interesting to see if he also remains a Yankee. And one more note, over the weekend, some high-profile college basketball teams suffered some unusual losses. Now, Kentucky and Ohio State lost to Gardner Webb and Finlay. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Never heard of it before. Now, they were exhibition games, but it is important to note that they did lose exhibition games to, again, I will repeat it again, Gardner Webb and Finlay.
No, Gardner Webb was an actual game. Ohio State's game was an exhibition game. They lost Kentucky when they lost to the Gardner Webb Bulldogs was an actual loss.
And Billy Gillespie's first game as a coach of Kentucky.
And I'd like to note that Kentucky never held a lead in that game. And through the second half, never closed in within 10 points of Gardner Webb. So, I mean, it wasn't even close. Kentucky got dominated in that game.
And last note I will mention is the Colts defensive end, Dwight Freeney. His foot injury could put him out for the rest of the season, and that is a big concern for the Colts, who have lost 2 straight games. And now I will send it to Brennan for the NFL rundown.
Yes, we are going to do the NFL rundown. Unfortunately, it is Tuesday, so we aren't going to be able to give you our Monday night football prediction. But
I would have predicted Seattle 24-0.
I would have predicted Seattle to win it, so I don't know. I don't know if it would have been 24-0, but I would have predicted a Seattle win. It wasn't very funny, though, Jason.
Continue.
Okay. First on the agenda will be the Minnesota Vikings losing badly, but, I mean, in all regards, it was even worse losing Adrian Peterson to what looks like a partially torn ACL that he has? A partially torn ACL?
I believe so, yes.
And to add insult to injury, that was the insult to the injury. The Minnesota Vikings end up losing 34-0, and the Green Bay Packers now are 8-1, tied for the best record in the NFC, along with the now 8-1 Dallas Cowboys.
And I think for Green Bay, like we've said all year, this is the second best team in the NFC behind Dallas. And a game that we should be looking forward to on the schedules in a couple weeks when Green Bay has to go to Dallas, which will be a highly anticipated matchup.
Yeah, and one thing they did get going in this game was a running attack. Grant, first-time starter, runs for 119 yards against a very good Minnesota Viking defense. So maybe Ryan Grant is their savior in the backfield right now.
Finally getting some help on the ground with Grant.
Yeah, and I mean, it made Brett Favre look amazing back in the pocket. The offensive line in particular is playing very well for the Packers right now. And the next game, the Jacksonville Jaguars defeat the Tennessee Titans in a rubber match in which the Titans won the first game. The Jacksonville Jaguars win 28-13. Another solid effort by Quinn Gray backing up the injured David Garrard. However, Garrard will be back next week, and Jacksonville was 2-1 while he was away. So it looks like the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to end up finishing the season on a strong note with their starting quarterback back at the reins for the team.
These are two teams in the AFC South that are very competitive, and this is an interesting division. Of course, you got the Colts at 7-2, and these two at 6-3. It'll be interesting to see if either one of these can make a playoff push. I'm not sold on Jacksonville what they have, but I like Tennessee. But the biggest problem for Tennessee yesterday was even though Vince Young was productive, maybe more productive yards wise than he normally is, the turnovers killed him, where they were -2 in the turnover game, which will always kill you.
And Tennessee, people have been talking about it. I don't want to really, you know, beat a dead horse, but people are talking about Vince Young and wondering, is this guy the real deal? He doesn't seem to be getting any better week to week. And in this game, he was the reason why they lost, basically. 2 interceptions, only 1 touchdown, and I mean, granted, he was the leading rusher on the team, but Vince Young just looks lost back in that pocket. And to force the kid to throw 41 times just is not his game.
I agree with you. The only thing I'll mention to that is, how does the numbers 14-7 sound to you? Because that's what Vince Young is as a starter. Now, I know he doesn't throw for a lot of yards, but he is 14-7 as a starter in the NFL.
That's, and granted, a very good record, but he's not a game changer. He's a game manager. And
you'll see.
Okay. All right.
You gotta
we'll
give
see.
Him time. He's a young quarterback. He's raw.
Yeah,
let's
but it just
a little time.
But it just does not seem like he is improving from week to week. Next game: Denver Broncos 27-11 over Kansas City. Denver is now 4-5. Kansas City falls to 4-5, and it looks like Selvin Young is going to be taking over the reins at running back, with Travis Henry being unable to play now with his pending suspension by the league. And it looks as if Damon Heward is out at quarterback at Kansas City. Do you like Brady Croyle being the man for the Chiefs now?
Yes, if the Chiefs believe that he's the future quarterback, but no, if this turns out to be a disaster where they learn that he can't play the position. But I guess you got to throw him out there to try. And he wasn't bad yesterday. In 30 attempts, he had 162 yards. And the thing for Denver, well, Kansas City killed themselves with 4 turnovers, but the thing for Denver that will be interesting is the Henry could miss the rest of the year with that suspension. Selvin Young, University of Texas, is looking to be maybe a replacement that Henry could
shoes. It doesn't really matter what running back you put in Mike Shanahan's system.
They're going
to produce. But it'll be interesting to see how Brody Croyle handles his first complete game as a starting quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, Miami has fallen now to 0-9. They lose to the Buffalo Bills, who are now 5-4 and second behind the New England Patriots. And Buffalo at this point looks, I mean, not great, but they look like they're getting better. J.P. Lossman back at the reins at quarterback after Trent Edwards went down with an injury. And Marshawn Lynch looks to be becoming a quality running back coming out of the backfield. Didn't run that great, but he did show flashes of being able to catch out of the backfield.
You're certainly right about Lynch, and 3 teams that come off the top of my head about the biggest surprises this year: Detroit, Cleveland, and Buffalo. And with Buffalo, it's, you know, when you look at Buffalo, they're 5-4 now. I actually have a friend of mine who's a huge Bill fan that keeps telling me that they should be 7-2. Well, we all should be 7-2.
Yeah, the Eagles should be 9-0, but you know, reality sets in.
But let's do remember that they did lose that very heartbreaking loss to the Cowboys on Monday night. And the last-second field goal to the Denver Broncos in Week 1, or they could be 7-2. But four straight, you know, you got to give it to the Bills. And Miami, what can you say? 0-9.
Yeah, 0-9. Go play Philadelphia next week in what I hope will be a blowout for the Eagles.
And I think Trent Green threw for 300 yards. Oh, no, wait. No, wait. He's not playing for Miami.
He's not playing. Yeah, not his own fault, I might add. St. Louis, however, picks up their first win. They are now 1-8. They beat New Orleans, who was on a four-game winning streak, but unfortunately couldn't muster enough offense until the fourth quarter to really make it a game. They lose 37-29. And Mark Bolger looks like he's back. However, Steven Jackson, another game in which he does not rush for 100 yards, and he just looks kind of lost back in the backfield.
The biggest problem I see with New Orleans in this game is with Deuce McAllister out for the year, Bush has to step into a responsibility that's larger than he's normally accustomed to. And seven carries for 17 yards is not going to get it done on the ground for Reggie. And the Saints, 4-5. Look, you start 0-4, and you tell yourself right now in Week 10 we're a game out behind the Buccaneers. You know, certainly you don't want to start 0-4, but the way they finished here, 4-1 in their last five, you know, only a game out, something that they should be happy with at this point.
Yeah, definitely. But Mark Bolger looked very good in that game. It'll be interesting to see what happens in New Orleans the rest of the way. Their defense isn't playing particularly well. And like you said, they have no running game at this point. And unlike the Green Bay Packers, who are able to pass, the New Orleans Saints don't have a defense like the Packers do. So if they get into a shootout, I just don't see them winning a lot of games, especially with just no ground game, whatever. In a very exciting game, the Pittsburgh Steelers defeat the Cleveland Browns, who, by the way, are legit. Pittsburgh wins 31-28, led by Ben Roethlisberger, who scampered for 30 yards for a touchdown that I think was the deciding factor in the game. And that made the score 24-21. Cleveland did come back. Josh Cribbs, his second return for a touchdown in the game, 100-yard kickoff return. It was fantastic to watch, but the Pittsburgh Steelers ended up winning the game on a 2-yard pass to Heath Miller. And the Pittsburgh Steelers now are 7-2 and could pose a threat now, probably the only threat, to New England Patriots running the table.
And that's interesting that you bring that up. I'm going to ask you a question, Brandon, because I value your NFL opinion. Steelers are 7-2. The Colts are 7-2. Colts lose two straight. Steelers continue to look good. Do you think, like you asked, are the Steelers the second-best team? If the Steelers had to play the Colts in the playoffs, do you give the edge to the Steelers? And do you think the Steelers are the best shot, best team capable of beating the Patriots, if there is one?
I really think they are the best shot at beating the Patriots on their schedule. And, I mean, with the injury to Dwight Freeney, I would have said before now that there is no way that the Pittsburgh Steelers would have been able to defeat the Indianapolis Colts. But now after that injury to Dwight Freeney, they really don't have a pass rush unless you consider Robert Mathis. They did pick up Simeon Rice just recently off waivers, but he played very poorly for the Denver Broncos. So I think that secondary is going to be exposed by the Colts when they can't put any pressure on the quarterback. And I really think that the Steelers, this is long-winded, the Steelers are the second-best team in the AFC right now.
I agree with you. I think, and especially with the injuries the Colts are facing, you mentioned Freeney, Marvin Harrison, Dallas Clark set out Sunday. And the scheme that Pittsburgh runs on defense, I think they're the best suited. Now, I don't think they'll beat the Patriots, but I think they have the best possibility of doing it in the AFC.
Yeah, Willie Parker's a beast. They have Hein Ward, who's coming back and after his injury and playing very well. Heath Miller might be the best tight end in the AFC, and yes, I think he's right now better than Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez. I think Heath Miller definitely is the best tight end in the AFC. And I'll say it right now. I think the Steelers will beat the Patriots.
Wow.
I really do. Now, the next game. Oh, do you want to say something? You're kind of giggling, and I can hear you.
No.
Oh, no. Okay, that's what I thought. The Philadelphia Eagles defeat the Washington Redskins. I don't want to get really deep into this. I do want to bring this back up in the weekly fill, but they did defeat the Washington Redskins in Washington to avenge a loss earlier in the season. They win 33-25, and we will go into more depth in that during the weekly fill. The next game, the Atlanta Falcons defeat the Carolina Panthers 20-13. I had Carolina winning the AFC South. It does not look like they're going to. They are 0-4 at home, and Atlanta beats Carolina, and it's just weird to see Carolina so like inept on offense with that two-headed monster in the backfield and Steve Smith at wide receiver. What is going on with this team?
I think the biggest problem is Jake Delhomme's not there, and Jake Delhomme was a proven quarterback in this league, and when you have to turn to guys like David Carr, who's now hurt again,
and Vinny Testaverde,
the 44-year-old. You're going to have problems, and it's such a crazy year. 4-5, they're not out of it. They really aren't. I mean, Saints are 4-5 too, so a game out of the NFC South crown, but the way they're looking, it doesn't look good.
Right, exactly. I mean, a lot of places like that. AFC West is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFC West is wide open. And to be 4-5 and still have a chance, it just doesn't really seem correct, but it is. But, I mean, we just said the Carolina Panthers are not playing very good football, and regardless of whether they're one game out or not, I don't think there's any way that they're going to be making the playoffs. And, like I said, when I did my preview, I had Carolina in front of the New Orleans Saints, but I think that prediction is pretty much wrong at this point. Now, Cincinnati got back on track. They win 21-7 in Baltimore, a very tough place to play. This was the Ravens' first loss at home this year. Carson Palmer comes in, throws 271 yards. And Baltimore, again, is just inept on offense. Even with the inclusion of Willis McGahee, the Ravens are just, I mean, struggling on offense. And I might add that while it does seem like the Cincinnati Bengals scored 3 touchdowns, Shane Graham, in fact, kicked 7 field goals in that game. So our hats off and a tip of the cap to Shane Graham this week.
The problem here is it's not McGahee. It's not that he's a talented running back. It's that they have no protection to give him in the passing game. And it's kind of getting sad that Steve McNair, I think his best days are far behind him. They committed 6 turnovers again. He lost 2 fumbles. And I think it's time to rebuild for this team. The great defense that they've had for so long it's still, the offense is nowhere close, and that gap doesn't seem to be getting closer at all.
No, it doesn't. And even, like you said, with the inclusion of Willis McGahee, that offensive line just is not producing for him. And Steve McNair, 4.9 yards a pass. I mean, you got to throw the ball a little bit further than that. But with Todd Heap, maybe it'll open up a little bit more. But as of right now, the Baltimore Ravens look absolutely confused on offense. In our next game, Chicago wins a very boring game at Oakland. They win 17-6. Not much can be said about this game. Rex Grossman probably will become the starting quarterback once again after Brian Griese went down with an injury. I do think so, and to be honest, I don't think they really want him to be back at quarterback. He did throw for a touchdown yesterday. 7-14, only 50% passing the ball. It's going to be a nightmare for Chicago for the rest of the year.
Do you know the severity of Brian Griese's injury? By chance.
No, I don't.
Okay. That's interesting that you say you think Grossman's going to finish the season for him, at least as a starter. I think you play a risk when you start doing this musical chairs stuff. And if Brian Greasy's not healthy, that's one thing. But if he is healthy, you got to keep him in, because you made a statement by what you did to Rex earlier in the year, and I think you have to stick with your guns with Greasy.
But here's
you live or die with him now.
Here's my thing, though. I think that Greasy, as far as his career in Chicago, it's over. And I say that because they are going to be auditioning Rex Grossman for the rest of the year to see, hey, are we going to actually give this guy a contract? He's a free agent at the end of the year. So I really think that the Bears are going to say, okay, here's your chance. Show us what you can do for the last, you know, 8 weeks or what last seven games of the season. And we're going to give you a contract based on your based on that performance.
I think his audition was the first 3 years where he was a piece of crap.
Well, he was also often injured as well.
That's true. But, I mean, that doesn't – I mean, he was still horrible last year. And one of the reasons why they couldn't win the Super Bowl, why they couldn't beat the Colts.
And let's not forget how horrible that trade was to the Jets, including Thomas Jones. Cedric Benson, one game this year with over 100 yards rushing, is averaging 3 yards a carry, has only three touchdowns, and a Texas product, round one, pick number four, looks like a complete and utter bust at this point.
I will defend him a little by saying, look, you're absolutely right. Benson's been subpar, if that's...
Subpar. His longest run for the season is 16 yards.
Okay, Benson, it's been horrible. There you go. But second, how about the offensive line play? How about the lack of passing game? I mean, if teams don't respect your passing game, they're going to load up on the running game. So it can't be put all on Cedric Benson's shoulders.
No, it can't. I agree to an extent. But still, to only have one game in which you have over 100 yards and you're averaging 3 yards a carry, dude, that's inexcusable. That's completely inexcusable. Fine, we'll see, but I guarantee you that this kid is going to finish up with a terrible, terrible season, and they're going to want, and they're already wanting Thomas Jones back in Chicago. Now, in a game in which I was able to see Eli Manning again fail in a big game, Dallas wins and gives the Eagles a chance to maybe catch up in the NFC East. Dallas wins 31-20. Tony Romo, I want to call him Homo, but Tony Romo throws another, I'm sorry, this is a PG-rated show, I'd like to think. I mean, plays a very excellent game. Eli Manning looks lost back in the pocket, and I don't know. Everyone was clamoring Eli Manning. Maybe he's turned the corner. Not yesterday. Two interceptions, and he also fumbled the ball once. Had three turnovers yesterday, and just proves again that he's not a big game quarterback. And Tony Romo, a guy who was undrafted out of Eastern Illinois, four touchdowns yesterday, 20 of 28, and looks very deserving of the contract that he received from the Cowboys.
In theory, they take a three-game lead in the NFC East with this victory. And if they weren't the best team in the NFC, I mean, you keep kind of looking at them as the best team in the NFC with Green Bay close second. And I don't see, sadly, as much as I don't want to say this, I don't see a lot of problems coming from Dallas that would prohibit them from being the Super Bowl representative right now from the NFC.
No, and if anything, they're only going to get stronger once Terry Glenn comes back. Terry Glenn hasn't even played a game this, or even a down this season. And to have him and a wide receiver core that already includes Patrick Creighton, who's really broken out as a great number two receiver, a great compliment to Owens. And Owens is having one of his best seasons ever. And they still have Jason Witten. It's just like they're actually going to be adding a weapon at some point during the season. So I hate the Cowboys,
me too.
Jeez,
one last note.
They
like
look
to
good
in there. Owens' 2004 season came to an end by losing the Super Bowl to the Patriots, and I have a funny feeling that the 2007 season could end the same way for T.O.
I agree. I don't think that. I think whatever NFC team, and right now, it looks like the Cowboys are going to be representing the NFC in the Super Bowl.
They look really good, but the Patriots are on a different level.
Yeah, and I don't really think it matters who makes it from AFC,
exactly.
Whether it would be the Colts, the Patriots, and the Steelers, who I think are the top three teams right now in the AFC to make the Super Bowl. Either one of those three teams, I think, has a much better chance of winning the Super Bowl than any NFC team, whether it's the Cowboys or the Packers, whoever comes out. And another interesting thing before I get into my next to last game, it's hard to imagine that the second best team you could say is the Green Bay Packers. A lot of people are still questioning them, and they're 8-1. So what does that say about the strength of the NFC? I'm not saying I am either, or you are, but a lot of people in general are, whether they're experts on ESPN or just reporters and journalists from other websites.
I think Dallas, Green Bay, and the Giants are good teams, despite maybe what Eli's inconsistency kind of draws back on the Giants. And I think after that, you got a lot of teams that you're not sure about.
Right. In the next game, the Detroit Lions lose against the Arizona Cardinals, 31-21. John Kitna is denied another week of a 10-win season, which he promised to Detroit. John Kitna, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in this game. And Kurt Warner, however, for the Arizona Cardinals, played a very good game. But, big stat in this game, 8 carries, -18 yards for the Detroit Lions.
I was going to mention that. And
wow.
This is one of the teams that we were talking about in the NFC. You have to put them fourth in the NFC just because of the record, because no one's close to 6-3. But, you know, you look at what they did 2 days ago against Arizona, and it's just inconsistency there. But I think, you know, Detroit's going to make the playoffs. I'll guarantee that right now. But you don't know what you're going to get from
them. Okay. Well, thank you for that, Kitna. I appreciate the the forecasting.
That was a good one.
Indianapolis loses their second game in a row after losing to the Patriots and what many people consider the game of the century. They lose to San Diego in San Diego, 23-21.
I think this was the game of the week.
This was the most. I don't want to say it was a good game to watch. 6 interceptions.
It was a good finish.
And let's be honest here. Any other player who throws 4 or even 5 interceptions,
thrown under the bus.
Yeah, but Peyton Manning. It's just a bad game. Just bad game he had. But I mean, 6 interceptions. That's something. And another. I know a lot of people focused on those 6 interceptions by Peyton Manning, and I've been dogging this guy all year. Every time we bring up San Diego, I'm always dogging him now. Phillip Rivers yesterday, 13 of 24, averaged only 4 yards of completion and had 2 interceptions. Is it too early to say Phillip Rivers is not a bust, but maybe isn't the future in San Diego at this point? Or is Norv Turner just not utilizing him properly?
You know, last week we both sat here and said that Phillip Rivers isn't doing what they expect him to do, and I still stick to that. But I don't think he's a bust. I think he has the potential to be a good quarterback. It's just going to take him some time.
But
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Were you going to address the Norv Turner question?
No.
Okay.
No, go ahead, though. So go ahead.
What do you think? Do you think that Norv Turner is not utilizing him properly? I mean, in addition to his two interceptions, had 2 fumbles, and one of them was lost.
And the second one that was a stupid one. I don't know if you saw the
game.
Yeah,
well, he had two less giveaways than Peyton Manning did.
You're right. I don't know about the Norv Turner thing, just because if you look at the carries to times they ran to the times they passed, it was 23-24. So it's not like they're making him go out and throw the ball 35, 40 times. But again, you're just going to have to live and die with him until he can get under his feet, get, you know, more capable and finding Gates and finding the new Chris Chambers and stuff like that. Maybe getting more in sync with Chambers. Now, before we wrap up this game, there's some interesting storylines I think from this game. You look at the Chargers, I think they are the 4th best team in the AFC.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Stop recording, my internet just died.
Yeah.
Especially after starting as slow as they did, the Chargers. Another thing, Antonio Cromartie had 3 interceptions from Peyton Manning, and that's coming after a week where he scores the longest touchdown in NFL history, the 109-yard return field goal against the Vikings. And for the Colts, you lose 2 straight after the epic game against the Patriots. injuries are going to be huge down the stretch to see how healthy this team can get for the playoffs. And like we mentioned with Pittsburgh earlier, maybe Pittsburgh jumps over the Colts into that two spot for the best team that could play with New England in the AFC.
Yeah. I agree with you that San Diego, I mean, when they play their game, they're the fourth best team in the AFC. But I just want to throw a statistic out for you. This would have been the third straight game in which LaDainian Tomlinson had less than 20 carries in the game. He only had 21 yesterday. The previous two outings, he had 7. No, it's not. But he was on his way yesterday to having another game in which he got less than 20 touches on the ground. Houston game had only 17. Rightfully so, they blew him out. But at Minnesota, he only has 16. For the season, he's had under 20 carries 4 times, and he's only had more than 22 carries once. And he's only had 2 games in which he's rushed for over 100 yards.
He did have 25 touches yesterday.
Yeah. I'm just saying on the ground.
Sunday, excuse me.
Right. Okay. Well, just on the ground, he had 21 carries. That's what I was saying. But it just seems like Norv Turner doesn't know what he's doing with these guys. And Marty Schottenheimer knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly what Phillip Rivers needed to do. He knew that he had to just keep giving the ball to LaDainian Tomlinson and was going to open up the passing game. Yesterday, their leading receiver had 4 receptions. And guess who that was?
Gates.
No, it was to Tomlinson.
Oh.
Gates only had 3 receptions, and Chambers, who they just got, had 2, and Vincent Jackson had 2. And I hate to stay in a game this long, but Norv Turner just seems like he's running that team into the ground, and he doesn't know what he's doing. And to be honest, I think I could do a better coaching job than Norv Turner at this point. He just looks completely lost. Completely and utterly lost. Heck, he almost lost the game yesterday, and Peyton Manning threw 6 interceptions. What does that say about your team?
It says that the Chargers had the best uniforms on Sunday night of any team.
And that may be the best part about their game yesterday. And Cromartie, who played a fantastic game. In the final game of the NFL, it was the Monday night game, in which me and Jason both correctly predicted Seattle winning. We made those predictions. If you didn't listen to the first part of the podcast, I don't know why you wouldn't. And you fast forward or something. We both said Seattle. It was after the fact, but we all knew who was going to win that game anyway. Seattle improves to 5-4. They are now 4-1 at home. San Francisco, a lot of experts were high on them in the beginning of the season. They started the season 2-0, now have lost 7 straight. They look totally lost. Alex Smith looks lost at the quarterback position. And Seattle, even without their 2 probably best players on offense, Deion Branch and Sean Alexander, managed to score 24 points, and they look good yesterday.
The only note I'll say about Seattle is, like you said, even without Alexander, I think this could be one of those teams that has a sneaky, you know, gets into the playoffs by winning the NFC West and maybe takes down somebody in a wild card game. You know, not huge success in the playoffs, but has been there before and has the ability to do it again in the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, Alex Smith not exactly playing his best right now, only has 2 passing touchdowns right now. Frank Gore, who had led the NFC last year in rushing, not playing that well, and the team just looks kind of lost right now, and they don't really have an identity on offense. And while their defense had been playing good up in this point, they did not play very well against Seattle yesterday. And like we mentioned, they lost. They didn't even have their 2 best offensive players, so that's saying something about their defense right now. Well, that is all for the NFL rundown. I hope you enjoyed listening to me for a prolonged period of time with a little snippets from Jason Mish.
I certainly did.
I thought you did. I enjoy listening to myself on a pretty consistent basis. If you didn't tell, I mumble and talk a lot. Did you notice that?
No.
No, you didn't. Okay. Well, okay, we are going to go to a short commercial break. However, there are going to be no commercials because no one sponsors us right now. So we'll see you guys in a few minutes.
We are back and better than ever here at East Coast Bias, and our next segment will be the usual college football rundown. A good week in college football, wouldn't you say so, Brennan?
A very exciting week in college football.
And we will begin with the number one team going down, and that would be Ohio State.
Yes!
I have the same reaction as you did, as they lose to the Illinois, because I can't think of their nickname right now. But Illinois improves to 8-3 with a 28-21
victory. Isn't the Fighting Illini?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Fighting Illini.
Yeah, horrible nickname.
And Ohio State suffers their first loss this season, falling to 10-1, and it takes some anticipation out of next week's Ohio State-Michigan game. But
yeah,
still,
kind of deflates it, but it's still a big game.
But it still has, it depends on who will represent the Big Ten in the Rose Bowl. So still some meaning behind it. And for Ohio State, do you think there's any chance that they climb back up with a win over Michigan, let's say?
Maybe. But, I mean, like right now, Oklahoma right now I think is a better one-loss team than they are. Kansas is going to play, has to play Missouri next week, which will be interesting. They could, in fact, leap ahead of Kansas if Kansas loses. That is considering Ohio State wins. But right now, I think there's a couple teams that are better than a one-loss Ohio State team right now. And what do you think Notre Dame and Charlie West are kicking themselves or getting rid of Juice Williams at this point?
Is that true? They had Juice Williams.
Yeah, well, he left, I thought. I'm pretty positive that Juice Williams had left Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Yeah. He looked great, and he's a sophomore, so let's look out for Illinois in the future.
Oh, definitely.
And Ohio State, it's I don't know if it was a case of looking ahead, but certainly a disappointing loss in your home stadium, which is such a tough place to play in Columbus.
Oh, definitely. I was shocked. I mean, I was rooting for Illinois the entire way. I never really thought they were going to win it, especially at Ohio State in Buckeye Country. It was a very fun game to watch, though. It really was. But I mean, I was ecstatic at the conclusion, 28-21.
The combination of Williams and Mendenhall, too much for the Buckeyes. Number two, LSU ran all over Louisiana Tech, 58-10, improved to 9-1, and more importantly, moved to the number one spot in the BCS standings. Brendan, if everything goes the LSU Tigers' way, do they deserve to play in the championship game, which they would be playing right now?
Oh, most definitely. And these are one of the LSU is one of the one loss teams I was talking about that is better than Ohio State. LSU, solid offensive side of the ball. Glenn Dorsey should win the Heisman. I really do. It's a shame that he's not really getting that much mention. A complete monster. He played hurt, and he's a great kid, and it's fun watching him play the game of football.
I agree with you, and LSU, I think, still, like I've said before, the best team in college football.
Yeah.
Regardless of the one loss, but and of course, they're on top of the standings, so they are the best team.
Yeah.
Number three, Oregon, who was three at the starting of the week, was a bye. And just some news and notes on them. They move up to 2 in the standings, in the BCS standings.
Rightfully so.
Of course. And we'll have Arizona, UCLA, and the Civil War, which is Oregon State, Oregon.
Oregon.
Left on their schedule. The number fourth-ranked Kansas Jayhawks again remain unbeaten with a huge victory, 43-28 over Oklahoma State. Really wasn't close, just too much offense from the Jayhawks with freshman quarterback Brian Reesing leading the way for 300 yards passing, and their running back McAnderson rushed for 142.
Best start since 1899 for Kansas. Incredible run for these guys. And like I said, these guys have to play Missouri, and then even if they beat Missouri, they are going to be playing Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship game. And let's say that they run the table. Let's say they do. I don't think they are either. I think they're going to lose to Oklahoma. But let's say they run the table. Do they deserve a title shot? They're going to be.
Yes.
That would mean they knock off number 9 Missouri, and they would knock off Oklahoma's number 4.
It would actually mean they knock off the 4-5 teams.
Yes.
So, yeah, they do. And even though those first 10 games, you really can't put any
too much merit on any. Maybe Oklahoma State was their toughest matchup throughout their schedule so far.
That's sad if they're 5-5, Oklahoma State.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, if they do, you beat the 4-5 teams back-to-back weeks, it would be, because Missouri's their last game, and then the Big 12 championship would be the next weekend. That, I think you got to put them in over one loss team.
So that would make them legit for you.
I don't know if it's legit, but in the crazy world we live in college football, where a computer tells us what to think, Kansas has to be 2 because they didn't lose.
Yeah, they would have to be. Maybe even number 1. I don't know about that, but be interesting to see what the computer's output come BCS championship time.
And like we said, Kansas moves into the 3rd spot in the BCS, right behind Oregon in the BCS picture. Number 5, Oklahoma, moves up to 4 with a victory over Baylor, 52-21. Oklahoma proves to 9-1, 5-1 in the Big 12. And like we've mentioned before, looking forward to that Big 12 championship game to really separate this logjam of Big 12 teams we have at 3, 4, and 5 in the BCS standings.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm really rooting for the Kansas, because I want to see them play Oklahoma, because I really want to see if Kansas is a legitimate team to play for the BCS championship game. Although I do like Chase Daniels out of Missouri.
And speaking of Chase Daniels, the 6th ranked Missouri Tigers, nice segue there. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Beat the Texas A&M Aggies 40-26, led by your Chase Daniel, threw for 352 yards, and behind an impressive running by Tony Temple with 141 yards, improved to 9-1 and 5-1.
Yeah, I've jumped off the Andre Woodson bandwagon and immediately jumped onto the Chase Daniel bandwagon.
He's definitely a dark horse for the Heisman, and each week they stay at 9-1 and move up in the polls, so you got to keep considering him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I really, really think that you got to consider him. And if he ends up beating Kansas, and that would mean, I would assume, right, that would have them play the Big 12 championship versus Oklahoma? So it would be Missouri and Oklahoma? Okay, I was just making sure.
Yeah, because Missouri and Kansas are in the Big 12 North, and Oklahoma's in the Big 12 South. So
right.
You were right.
Okay.
The 8th-ranked Boston College Golden Eagles lose their 2nd straight ball game, this time to Maryland. Go Terrapins. 42-35, BC allows 472 yards of total offense, 5 TDs, en route to their 2nd straight loss, Brennan. And is Matt Ryan's glittering chance, glimpse of Heisman immortality now completely down the tubes?
I think it's pretty much down the tubes. Matt Ryan was, you talk about Chase Daniels, a dark horse. Matt Ryan, I think, was a dark horse at one point, even when he was playing his best football. You feel bad for the kid. He plays at BC, of course. BC, you know, always known for a solid football program, not always great, but I was really rooting for the Eagles, and it's unfortunate that Ryan has played, not poorly, but just not Heisman caliber in the last couple games.
Boston College still could win the ACC championship with a win over Clemson, who is 5-2 in conference, and thus giving BC the edge in their division.
Yeah.
The 9th-ranked Arizona State Sun Devils remain with one loss on their record, improving to 9-1, with a 24-20 victory over UCLA. Auburn and Georgia in a gritty Southeastern Conference game. Georgia wins big here, 45-20, improving to 8-2. Auburn falling to 7-4.
And Stafford for Georgia looks to be kind of getting into that, you know, Heisman picture, maybe, but maybe it's a little bit too late for him. He's playing fantastic football, very efficient. Only completed 11 passes yesterday, but still threw for 237 yards, averaged almost 13 yards of completion.
The 11th-ranked Virginia Tech Hokies improved to 8-2 with a 40-21 victory over the Florida State Seminoles.
Yes.
Tyrod Taylor, the freshman, led in passing with 204 yards. He also led with rushing with 92. And it is a sad year in college football when we say that Florida State and Miami are 6-4 and 5-5, respectively.
I am enjoying that immensely.
And I agree with you. I like it. The good teams have to suffer sometimes.
Yes, it's great.
Michigan gets upended by the Wisconsin Badgers. In Wisconsin, 37-21, Michigan falls to 8-3. This is their first loss after the first two losses of the season came to Appalachian State and Oregon. They then won eight straight. Then they lose to Wisconsin before their big game with Ohio State next weekend. And Brendan, who are you leaning towards, Ohio State, Michigan, for that big matchup?
Oh, I am going to have to lean towards Ohio State just because of their consistent and solid quarterback play. I'm not a big believer right now.
Health.
Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
The thing is, Beckman, I think, killed him. I think he threw three interceptions against Illinois. I think that's correct. And for Michigan, though, you're right. It's Henny and Hart have been injured, which is a huge liability if you're a Michigan.
You were right, Todd. Beckman threw three interceptions in that game versus Illinois.
Well, to stick with what you said, he has been good all year.
Yeah, he has before that game. Yeah.
But I'm leaning towards Michigan, though, and it'll be a good game to watch.
Do you think Henny will be the starting quarterback in that game, or do you think they're going to throw
the... If Michigan wants to win, if my prediction's going to be right...
To come to fruition.
Chad Henny, and there better be Michael Hart behind Chad Henny on Saturday.
Yeah, because that's why I say if they don't have either one of those guys, and I'm assuming they're not going to have one of them, I think Michigan doesn't have a chance.
13th-ranked UConn loses to Cincinnati in a Big East tussle, 27-3.
Ooh, I like that word.
Thank you. I thought about that for a second. Cincinnati improves to 8-2. UConn falls to 8-2 and still can win the Big East with a showdown versus West Virginia later in the season.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Speaking of West Virginia, a lot of people forgot about them for some reason. Another very good one-loss team. I think another team that's better than Ohio State.
I agree with you. I think they have a little too much work to do. I think they're a little too far. I think they're seventh. I'm looking at it right now. They're sixth in the BCS. But I think that's a little too much
makeup. Yeah, they'd have to have a lot of help.
The next game, the 14th-ranked Texas Longhorns, still in a shot for a BCS bid, if they play their cards right, improved to 9-2 with a 59-43 victory over Texas Tech. Texas Tech drops to 7-4. And Graham Harrell, a huge game for Texas Tech, 466 yards passing. But Jamal Charles doing it again for the Longhorns, 174 yards rushing.
Yeah, and you know the biggest news to come out of this game is Texas coach Mike Leach fined, I believe it was $10,000 for criticizing referees in this game, the largest fine levied against a coach in Big 12 history.
The Florida Gators, the defending champions, 15th ranked. Put up 51 against South Carolina. The old ball coach, their former coach, Steve Spurrier, 51-31.
Yeah.
South Carolina falls to 6-5. After earlier in the season being as high as 7th in the polls. And Florida improves to 7-3.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Tebow, huge game. 5 touchdowns, 120 yards rushing, more passing, great game. And maybe in that talk of Heisman still.
Yeah, but again, Tim Tebow rushes the ball too much, and this is the reason why Florida is 7-3. Been saying it all year.
Hawaii remains unbeaten, and an interesting story in this year's college football season. The 16th-ranked Hawaii Warriors win 37-30 over Fresno State. And their star quarterback, Cole Brennan, ties the NCAA record for touchdowns with
Ty...
Yeah, I
Detmer.
Was going to say, boy, it's definitely Ty Detmer. Ty Detmer, who used to play for BYU.
Man, what's that saying about Cole Brennan's further NFL career?
I wanted
Ooh.
To... Yeah, not much, right?
No.
But I wanted to bring up with Hawaii. We had this kind of last year with Boise State, a smaller conference school being undefeated. Let's say, for the sake of this conversation, they go 12-0. Do they... I'm not saying do they... do they deserve a chance in a championship game? I think that's absurd. But do they deserve a BCS game?
Ooh, if they beat Boise State, maybe, and that's assuming Boise State continues to win their games. Right now, they're ranked, I believe, 18th. I don't know. We've gone over who Hawaii's beaten the last couple weeks that we've done the college football rundown. New Mexico State, Central Southern, Louisiana Tech, Northern Colorado. It's like, who are these guys playing? Who are you trying to fool? And again, their leading rusher had 50 carries. I mean, some teams combined for that much in a game, and that's how many they've had in their season so far.
Even if they deserve it, I don't know if it's possible just because they're 16th in the latest BCS standings. They would have to get in the top 10 to be eligible for a BCS bowl game. And I don't see those teams losing. I mean, some of them could lose the games, but they would need four or five teams to lose a game to drop themselves out of that position and put Hawaii in. So I'm going to say no to that question.
Yeah, but it is interesting, though, because you said about Boise State playing so well last year. They really didn't play anyone either. They played no one that was ranked. They played Louisiana Tech as well. They did, however, play Oregon State and some other. They played Nevada, probably their toughest game. But somehow they won that game versus Oklahoma 43-42. So I don't know whether that was a fluke or it was legit. I'm leaning towards a fluke. But, you know, maybe Hawaii can do the same thing.
Two more games we will mention before we wrap up the college football rundown. The 17th-ranked USC Trojans win 24-17 over the 24th-ranked California Golden Bears. And this game, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, would have been one of the huge matchups in college football.
Are you talking about the Penn State-Temple game?
No, definitely not that one.
Okay.
And Cal 6-4, USC 8-2. 8-2, definitely not what Pete Carroll had envisioned at the start of the year.
No.
And USC had started the year at 1, and this is the last I'll note about this. And USC started the season at number 1. Number 1 teams this year. How many number 1 teams do you think have lost at the number 1 position, Brent?
Three?
You see stats just like I do. Good. And about the number 2s? Do you know the number 2s, how many losses they have?
4?
6.
Damn.
But I'll give you credit for the 1s.
Okay, thank you.
So 9 total losses from the spots of 1 and 2. And I bring this up at the USC game just because, you know, they were the preseason number 1. And it's just something we haven't seen in college football in a long time. And I think it's actually made the season more interesting. Wouldn't you agree?
I really would. And, you know, it's interesting to see a team like California at 6-4. You know, they were ranked 24th. It just shows that the college football, much like college basketball has been for a while now, college football seems to be getting a lot more parity in the game, and it's a lot. I think it's a lot more fun to watch. I think knowing who the BCS, who's going to be in the BCS championship game, like 3 weeks, 4 weeks before the season even ends, is kind of, you know, like, you know, what does that really entail? You're not excited to watch it. You're not excited to see them play their games anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm enjoying it.
I think so many problems with college football come around this BCS stuff. And the one thing I will say, let's look at the Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri thing we were talking about earlier. In essence, isn't that kind of like a playoff system where they're 3, 4, and 5? They're going to play each other.
Right.
So somebody's getting knocked out. Two of them are getting knocked out, and one's going to remain. So if you look at it that way, you know, that's where we can look at parity and how maybe the BCS isn't as bad as we want to believe it is. It's still pretty bad.
No, it is, and I would enjoy a playoff system, but I would not be able to be the person to tell you how it would work, because I think there's a lot of, I mean, there's 20 top 25 teams, then you have conference championship games. It would be wild.
I would go with 8 teams.
Okay.
Last game of note, we will mention the 19th-ranked Virginia Cavaliers, I believe. Yes, it is. Improved to 9-2 with a 48-0 whooping behind the woodshed of Miami. Like I said earlier, Miami falls to 5-5. And, of course, 48-0 happens to be on the final game Miami plays at the Orange Bowl. Not a good way to end the memories of the Orange Bowl for the Hurricanes.
No, certainly not. But like I said, I am very happy to see Florida, Florida State, and Miami all lose and not succeed in college football. I'm really tired. I've been tired of hearing about them forever. And I'm glad to see teams like Kansas and these other, you know, not, you know, powerhouses like a Boston College and a Missouri and even an Arizona State up there. I think it's refreshing.
I have to disagree with you on Florida because I'm a fan of the Gators. And down in that country, they say you either Gator, you Gator bait.
I'm Gator bait.
Okay.
I'm a Big Ten boy.
I think that's a good end to the college football rundown.
You like Texas and Florida. What is wrong with you?
You know.
Stop it. Stop it right now. Stop it.
I can't explain it. I'm sorry.
You can't, and that you need to stop.
Well, that will do it.
It's an addiction.
Our college football rundown. Of course, every Monday / possibly Tuesdays if we procrastinate slightly, you will catch our NFL rundown and our college football rundown. Moving on to our final segment of this podcast, it is the Weekly Fill. Two things I will like to address, and I will give you the floor in a second, Brendan.
Okay.
Is, of course, the Eagles' victory and the pickup of Brad Lidge. Start on whichever topic you would like to, and go ahead.
Well, I would like to generalize the Brad Lidge acquisition with the re-signing of J.C. Romero and just saying that it looks like we are going to have our bullpen in order. Some players that are on free agency, though, Antonio Alfonseca, Jose Mesa. Not really sure that we're going to be getting those guys back with these two acquisitions. Definitely not Jose Mesa. I don't think that he's even going to be back in the major leagues next year, but I'm extremely excited about having Brad Lidge. And J.C. Romero pitched his butt off last season for us in the 51 games that he pitched. And, you know, I'm very excited. I can't believe I'm saying I'm excited about them signing J.C. Romero, but I am, dude. I really am.
They overpaid for him. I think it was 3 years, $12
million.
But
it's $4 million. He had a sub-2 ERA.
But in what, 2 months of relief?
Yeah, but 51 games, dude. That's half a season. I think that's legit.
Let's get to the bigger point, Lidge. And as a pessimistic Philly sports fan, I think a lot of people will point to the collapse or the mental breakdown. I mean, you could almost call it that Lidge has had after giving up those huge postseason home runs, one to Pujols, one in the World Series to the White Sox, so on and so forth. But to back that up, I've always been a fan of Lidge, and I think he'll get his act together. So I start that with being very pessimistic, but I think he will be a good acquisition. And more importantly, one last thought. Sorry to...
No, it's fine.
But I think more importantly, it's good because it moves Brett Myers back to where he should be. He should be the number two on this staff, and we don't even have to worry about starting pitching this year.
No.
Because of that.
And it's interesting, you know, you brought up Brad Lidge and everything. And you know what's really... And I don't know if a lot of people have talked about this, but Brad Lidge pitched an Enron field. I mean, you talk about Citizens Bank Ballpark being a hitter's park. That place out the left field is like 300 feet. I mean, I could hit a home run out there. So for him, shut up. I could. And you probably could too.
Okay.
But, I mean, that guy pitched in a pitcher's park. So it's not like this is new territory for him. And I think that the dimensions of Citizens Bank are even a little bit less inclined than an Enron is. Actually, I would very much assume that it is. So I think it's great. I think it's a great pickup, and for him to pitch that well, and it's not like he pitched terrible after he gave up the Pujols home run. He did have more blown saves, but his ERA was still under 3.3. He still had a great K to walk ratio. So I think it was very solid, and I don't think they really gave up that much for him.
He's going to be a good closer for us next year.
Definitely.
Would you like to, I mean, I didn't get to see the Eagles game. I imagine that you would attribute this win to Westbrook from a person who didn't watch the game, Brent.
I was screaming the entire game about it. And listen, we won the game. We did. I mean, you saw a score, I saw a score, we won. But they wonder why people are saying, well, Brian Westbrook, he gets injured all the time. Well, it's because we use him so much. He was our entire offense yesterday. I mean, he literally was our entire offense. And for a guy that's under 6 foot, he's, I mean, hardly 200 pounds. To use him that much, it's like we are running this guy into the ground. And I actually feel bad for him sometimes. But I don't know if anyone else really talks about it. They have got to stop relying on him so much. And I think that's he had one of his best seasons when Terrell Owens was here because he didn't have that added pressure. He was able to kind of relax, and he didn't. And while I think he can carry that on that load on his shoulders. He did yesterday, but I would like to see them take some of that off him. The Eagles organization take some of that weight off of his shoulders and let someone else step up finally.
Barring the worst loss in franchise history next week, we will be 5-5, right?
I would assume so.
Can we say that? Okay.
We can say that.
I mean, what are we still in that 9-7, 8-8, Bob? I mean, that's what we're talking about here, right? I mean, nothing beyond that, really. Right?
No.
I mean, that's, yeah.
But, I mean, and it'll be interesting to see if we can, you know, get 9 or 10
How
wins.
About,
We still have to play New York. We have to play Dallas again. Of course, we have the Patriots right after we play the Dolphins. But, you know, if we win a couple of those, if we maybe win 2 out of 3, maybe we have a shot at the playoffs. But as of right now, I don't really foresee it right now.
I don't either. And, you know, after all the speculation with McNabb, and I mean, last week kind of started the how long does McNabb have left talk. And for him to come out, throw for 254 touchdowns, have a good game, even embrace Andy Reid at the end of the game, I think it was big. And McNabb's my guy. He's my team leader, so.
And before, you know, before.
I'll always be behind him.
I will, too. I'm a big believer in Donovan McNabb. I've been, you know, supporting him even after all these people, all these, you know, quote-unquote fans, apparently have forgotten that he led us to 4 straight NFC Championship games and our only, you know, Super Bowl appearance since we lost when Ron Jaworski was our quarterback. People in Philadelphia tend to forget that very quickly. And you know how he mentioned that black quarterback and white quarterback thing? You know, to be honest now, I kind of think there was some truth to his words. I don't really agree with how he went about it. But, I mean, after all this crap that's been going on with the fans and everything, I kind of see where he's coming from. And I feel bad for him. But, you know, I hope for him the best. And if he were to go anywhere else, man, I couldn't wish any better things for him. I really couldn't.
Exactly. I agree with you. And I would hope that he gets a Super Bowl just to shut up the fans here or the media here.
Yeah, definitely.
To show that he can do it.
Yeah, and I think he's totally capable of it. And he's played in big games before. And he's, you know, he's won and lost, so. Well, one thing before we end the show, I did want to ask you. This was a question I posed to my manager, who happens to be an Eagles fan. Should the Eagles blow up this team next year if they don't end up going out and getting a big name wide receiver? Because I myself say, you know what, you know, cut your losses, get rid of McNabb, you know, get as much value as you can for him, unless you're willing to go out there and get someone to take the pressure off of him and take the pressure off of Brian Westbrook. Neither of those guys deserve what's happening to them right now, and they need someone at the wide receiver position. It can't be some, you know, Joe Schmo, a number 2 wide receiver or a 3 wide receiver like Kevin Curtis. That cannot be the guy that we go out and get. He's got to be legitimate, and I'm talking about Chad Johnson.
There's two. Wow. I would love that, first off. Let's put that out there. But it's too early. There's too much talent on this team to blow it up. And I really, you're just a player away, like you're talking about, Brennan.
Right.
You really are. So why ruin it?
Because it's frustrating to see them know that we're one player away. We saw we were one player away with Terrell Owens. So why not just say, you know what, screw it. If our team blows up, they blow up. If they don't, they don't. And they will win if we have a number 1 wide receiver on this team.
Did you happen to want to use a different word there, Brennan?
I was, yeah, I know.
No, I don't know. If if it gets to the point where we have to do that, if we have to blow it up just because, I would think that would just be a function of what the media has created here. This anti-McNabb bull crap, and it just frustrates me. I don't know why we can't support one of the most successful quarterbacks in our
franchise. Not to mention in that game, it happened to be the Reggie Brown touchdown. He passed Ron Jaworski for the most completions all time for an Eagles quarterback. But no one wants him. Everyone, trade him. Put in Kevin Cobb. We saw what Kevin Cobb can do. He fumbled on his first play of the season when he came in during the Detroit game. So, I don't know. It's still mind-boggling to me, but, you know, what do we know? We're only fans, right?
Exactly.
We're only fans, although we tend to know a little bit more than most people. Well, that is all for East Coast Bias this week. We had a blast. Remember, guys, today is Monday. We are pretending that it is not Tuesday. We don't want to be labeled procrastinators, although I'm afraid to say that we are. But
It's Monday.
We want to thank you guys again for listening to us. Be sure to check out missioncounty.blogspot.com. I know that we haven't updated since Friday, but we will have some stuff up on the site very soon.
There's stuff up there right now that's new.
Oh,
check
really? Really? Did you put that up there recently, Jason?
Yes, I did. Check it
out. All right. I'll check it out. And please make sure to click the icon that we just put up on the site. We were nominated as one of the best sports blogs on Blogger. Please sign up and vote for us. It'd be great if we won an award. And even if we didn't, we just appreciate the votes. And one last thing, I want to plug the Palestra, the Cathedral of Basketball, a very great DVD about possibly the best college basketball venue of all time, and that is the Palestra, home of the Penn Quakers. Please check out, I have the link on the site, winner of the Philadelphia Film Festival, and it was a very, very awesome movie.
You do love to talk.
I really do.
Go ahead.
I really do. Well, this was East Coast Biased, and I am Brandon Canny.
And I am the wonderful Jason Mish.
Thanks again for listening, guys. We will see you next month.
Peace.